Hi, I'm Rabbi Amalia Mark, and you're listening to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist. And this podcast is good to the last drop.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
Is this thing on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
What?
What?
Gabe, are you there?
Amanda?
Can you listen? Can you hear me?
Are you going through a tunnel or something?
I don't know how this podcast is going to work if we can't get, you know, ourselves to listen to each other.
Oof. Yeah, this might be rough.
Wait, you're coming through clear now. How did you get me to hear you?
I don't know. I think I tried really hard, maybe. Or maybe I didn't. I don't know. Were you listening harder?
I think so. I definitely was causing myself to listen a little bit harder on this particular intro.
Okay. You were, like, opening up your ears. You were trying to listen intentionally.
I was active listening. That's true. I'm not sure how much longer we can spread out this intro for our listeners before they get bored, so don't worry. We're getting started right now.
Let's go.
It seems awkward and somewhat impossible that we are so far into Deuteronomy, and it seems even funnier that the person with auditory processing is talking about this particular portion. You know, the one that says, Ha'azinu, like, make sure that you can hear, like, make sure that you are being heard. Make your ears listen. Well, I know that Gabe most of the time, like, really wishes that I would listen to that advice, and sometimes I get to get it done. But I have to tell you, you know, we in the podcast world, like, we don't really order people to make your ears listen to us, but we do humbly request, like, Ha'azinu, that you can make your own ears listen to us. Like, that would be great. Like, you know, Ha'azinu na, maybe, like, please let your ears listen to us. That would be excellent. But before I go too far afield in this almost to last parsha of Deuteronomy, we've got a few more coming our way, but, like, really, we're heading towards the end. I just want to say, thank goodness for people who can help us bring it together. Today's kind of an interesting episode. It's a weird portion, and we've got some, I don't know, scheming, rhyming, things that'll happen, because I think it's a poem, but more on that later. But thankfully, we have somebody who not only loves poetry, but also loves some, we like to say, organized chaos. And the way that I know that is because I happen to have known her for a while, and she's worked at places that definitely emphasize and embrace the organized chaos. So Rabbi Amalia Mark earned her Smicha Rabbinic Ordination at the Rabbinical School of Hebrew College, and she holds a BA in theater with a concentration in gender and women's studies from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. That's UMBC. She studied at the Pardes Institute for Jewish Studies for 2 years and earned a certificate in experiential education from the Pardes Center for Jewish Educators. So Pardes, like, definitely support this episode. Share it. She's an alum. We'd love to for you to share it. It'd be great. Amalia has worked across the U.S. as a Jewish educator for ages 8 to 80, and she firmly believes that every Jew deserves literacy and meaningful access to text, tradition, and ritual. Currently, Amalia works as the Director of Programs and Partnerships at Mayim Chaim, a mikveh, a ritual bath, for all Jews in Boston, Massachusetts. Wait a minute, Gabe, isn't that where you're from? Don't worry, no one cares. When not discussing the intersection of feminism, mikveh, and Jewish ritual practice, she's hanging out with her cats and learning how to identify the plants she sees around her Brooklyn neighborhood. Wait, Gabe, aren't you from Brooklyn? Everyone cares. Amalia, we're so excited to have you. Welcome to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist.
Thank you so much. I am delighted to be here with you and with Gabe.
And because of my bold move of telling people that nobody cares about the fact that Gabe comes from Boston, even though we have a lot of loyal listeners in Boston, Gabe Snyder, how's it going?
I was good until about 30 seconds ago.
Why, when Amalia was giving her answer?
No, when you said that I was from Brooklyn. I live in Brooklyn. I'm not from Brooklyn. I'm from Boston.
Sorry, from where?
From Boston.
Okay, I'm going to try to make my ears listen to that a little bit later. But for right now, like, you know, I think we've got a podcast to put on, don't you?
Yeah, we should probably do that.
Let's get started.
So Amanda was pretty much right when she said this whole thing is basically a poem. So for this week on our distilled Parsha summary, I've written perhaps the greatest poem of all time. God the Rock is pretty great, but Israel struggles to earn their fate. God led and protected the Israelites, but they just bickered and got in a lot of fights. God gave them food and land and stuff, but Israel's actions were pretty rough. They worshipped idols and forgot their rock. God was angry and frankly shocked. How could the people whom I've saved ignore the commandments that I made? My instructions really were quite easy, but instead their actions, they make me queasy. So God set upon them plagues and misfortune. They toiled and struggled to get to the Jordan. They've finally arrived at the foot of Mount Nebo, but God still might smite them just like a mosquito. And yet God shielded and protected the people, for they were the chosen, in a haystack, the needle. So now we must to our one God return, for God's anger and passion and love all still burn. That is the end of Moses' song, but there is still more to do, though this rundown is long. To the height of Mount Nebo, Moses ascends to speak with God and to meet his end. Oh, wait, I guess that's in the next portion? So listen in next week for Moses' fortune. So yeah, that's it. Sorry to leave you, but in the end, that's Parashat Ha'azinu.
Wow, Gabe. Do they call you the Jewish Dr. Seuss? That was fantastic.
I mean, they really should. I didn't make up that many words in this, but I think I could have with the star-bellied sneeches with stars upon thars.
I love it. That is a really beautiful and modern interpretation of Ha'azinu. Gorgeous. I think something that really strikes me in this week's Torah portion is that actually we're nearing the end, right? The end where we start again. And if we look at how this begins, it is really reminiscent of creation. If we look at the language of let the heavens hear me, let the earth hear me, which are the very beginning of creation, and then let my speech distill as the dew, may my discourse come down as the rain, the separations of the waters, like showers on young growth, like droplets on the grass. So I actually think that Moses here is standing and invoking this deep primordial moment because the Israelites are about to become something brand new. And so as he's calling out, listen to me, he's doing it in the most powerful way he can by saying, remember creation, remember the very beginning of time that has led to this moment.
You know, I really love that for a lot of reasons. I think that there's something really wonderful about the idea of like, this is the end of the Torah. Like, we are so close to the end, and yet this is a new beginning for the people. And so there's something really wonderful about that, like, kind of cyclical thing going on. So I really love that idea of connecting this, like, penultimate portion back to Bereishit. I think that's really wonderful. The other thing I'm reminded of is this idea of when God says, when God is creating human beings, God says, let us make them, let us create man or humans in our image, excuse me. And so there's a lot of commentary on like, who's God talking to? Like, is God talking to the angels? What's God talking to? And I don't remember which commentator it was, which makes me bad, but I'm pretty sure that it was Nachmanides who said, actually, God is speaking to the earth. God is saying to the earth, let's together, you, earth, and me, God, make human beings. This idea that, you know, we're of the form, the physical form of the earth, but the spiritual form of God. And so that's kind of how some of the medieval commentators get around this idea of like God having a physical form, and we don't like that very much. But what I love here is that part of what's making the people into a people is this transition of crossing the Jordan, is this transition of going into the land. In a way, the land is once again making the people, whether it's Sinai or Nebo or the promised land.
Absolutely. And I think there's also a bigger thing happening here. There's the people, so we have this collective. And then there's Moses, Moshe, who is, I think, I read him as going through this deep pain and this deep challenge of, I don't get to go with you. and I have to stay behind. And some of this poem is actually really hard to read. It's really painful. He's really rebuking the people. It's not very nice. It's sort of, this is what you want your last words to be? Really? How could that be? And so I spent a lot of time feeling very challenged by Moshe speaking to the people this way. Because you're both leaders of the Jewish people. I mean, is this really how we want to talk to others? And trying to get inside Moshe's head and figure out, why is this what he's saying? Why is this his sort of last bits of wisdom to the Jews before they cross over into something new? And while I was looking at this, I think my way of redeeming this and reading it is that this is who Moses is. This is who he is. He is harsh. He's fiery. I mean, there is a reason why God chose to appear as a burning bush, fire speaking to fire. And I think that Moses is desperate, desperate for the people to succeed, desperate for this project to succeed. And so it might not be the way that I would have chosen to speak to the people, but I think it's like classically who we know Moses to be, as not always speaking with gentleness and kindness, and not always speaking with love, but the undercurrent, what's under all of this is I want you to be able to do this. And so I'm going to talk to you in the way I know how, which is invoking God and invoking frustration and anger. And at the end of the day, spoilers, don't listen if you don't want to hear spoilers. But at the end of the day, at the end of the cycle of the Torah, in Vizot HaBracha, Moses blesses everybody. So there is love there. We just can't stop here.
I love that so much. While you were talking about Moses' speech, how Moses kind of has this fiery tongue, I'm also thinking about how Moses says he's slow of speech and slow of tongue, that there's this quality of Moses that he's not a great speaker. He needs Aaron to speak for him. He needs God to tell him what to say because he's not great at talking. And yet here he is giving not just like a sermon. He's not talking to the people in a conversational way off the top of his head. He's got like a song. This really is. It's poetic. It's beautiful. It's not something you would expect from somebody who earlier said, I'm slow of speech and slow of tongue. I think there's almost like a character development happening in that way.
Yes. And I think there's something about the fact that Moshe tells people at the end of this, this should be repeated, that it's not just my last words, but this should reverberate for you. This should continue. I read in my own way of it's continuing because we're reading this Torah portion. We don't have like a designated time and holiday when we read these words to the people. It's just the Shabbat that we read Parshat Ha'azinu. But it's so important for Moses that he says, Ki hu chayechem, that this is your life. This is so big that you can't possibly go into the Jordan. You can't possibly cross over the river until you've heard this and taken it in and really sat with it. And I think that the only way to really be able to sit with some really enormous ideas is through poetry. That's why Moshe chooses to give his message that way, because poetry has a way of softening us and a way of letting us hear things new. And there's nothing quite new that Moshe is saying. There isn't like, oh, I didn't know that that happened with the Israelites. This is not new information, but it is a new way of speaking. So maybe, I'm going to argue against myself, actually, maybe this is Moses growing a little bit. He has a new way of talking to the people at the end of his life.
I know that you brought with you a poem today, and I'm wondering if, given what you said about how poetry can kind of speak to us in a way that's different from regular everyday speech, I'm wondering if you would share that with us.
Sure. I will say it's not my words. I want to be clear. I am no poet. But Yehuda Amichai, who is one of my favorite poets, an Israeli poet, he has written such beautiful, beautiful pieces that I like to match up to Torah portions. And so when I was preparing for this podcast, I was thinking, what is the Yehuda Amichai poem that matches Ha'azinu? I think this is a little bit of a drash on how it matches, but this is drinking and drashing, so I feel allowed to do that. I'm going to read it in the English, and it's going to give the Hebrew and English title and then read it in the English. so it's most accessible for everybody listening. This is called Im Befeh Mar Tomri. If with a bitter mouth you will speak sweet words, the world will neither sweeten nor become bitter. And it is written in the book that we shall not fear. And it is also written that we shall change, like the words in future and in past, in the plural or in the solitary. And soon in the coming nights we shall appear like wandering minstrels, each in the other's dream. And in these dreams we'll be strangers we did not know together. And when I read this poem, it made me think of the sweetness and the bitterness, and the not knowing is really the distillation of what Moses is saying. Yes, I did mean that pun.
Nice.
So, Amalia, I know that some of the work that you do deals with really like mikveh, this idea of flowing water. And I have to tell you, I find that an interesting situation to be in right now, because flowing water both works for Moses, works against Moses, and weirdly shows up in Hazinu as well. And so it works for Moses, right? Like, it saves Moses' life. He gets put onto the Nile in a basket. It saves his life. The Sea of Reeds opens. He gets to cross the other side with all the Israelites. Okay, great. It works against Moses when he strikes the rock, you know, without being instructed to do so, and water flows forth from it. And here, in this particular portion, right near the beginning, we have a really incredible moment where we read, Ya'arov kematar lichi, tizal katal imrati kishirim, ale deshe, v'hirvivim ale esav. May my discourse come down as the rain. My speech, this one is for you, Gabe, distill as the dew. Like showers on young growth, like droplets on the grass. There's a lot of water imagery, and it seems that water can be incredibly healing, but it also tends to wear away. And I know that you said that Moses is like this fire energy, and I feel like people would argue, like, wait, but like, isn't Moses like this water energy? I'm curious how you find those two things to kind of come together.
Amanda, you're making me think in such different ways. I love how you've brought up Moses' connection to water. I hadn't really thought about the deep ways that he is enmeshed in water, both for good and for bad, like you mentioned. This is my midrashic brain activated, but I'm seeing here in our text that there are four different expressions of water. And I'm wondering, are there four times that Moses explicitly interacted with water that maybe each of these is referring to in different ways? The Sea of Reeds being placed in water, hitting the rock, when the Israelites are crying out for water. That's just coming to mind and bubbling up, if you will. I love a water pun. I work with water, so there's just gotta be water puns. Not a staff meeting at my work without minimum two water puns. But no one's hitting a rock. So I think that it's maybe the great cosmic balance, if you will, of we have this fiery personality who doesn't want to be a leader, isn't interested at first, or really the entire time we see him saying to God, please, I don't want to do this. This is terrible. Please make it stop. And we see this harif, this spicy person, this person who is angry, who smashes tablets, who is just not super relationship based, one might say. And water being his downfall is maybe, if we're to read really midrashically into this, a way of God saying, this is how you balance yourself. How can you lean more into water attributes? How can you lean more into going with the flow? Or allowing the Israelites to wear away and shape you into something new, as opposed to just trying to be who you were. What does it mean for us to have people who are challenging around us and allow them to help us grow into our better selves? And can we say that Moses did that? Yes, yes. And what would have happened if we write this sort of fan fiction, which Midrash is at its greatest self, this fan fiction of Moses responding with empathy and care and love and softness when the Israelites complained that there's no water. as opposed to Moses saying, oh, these people, they're like babies that are clutching at me and I can't deal with it. God, this is horrible. How long do I have to deal with this? Which is hearkening back to Sefer Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, when the people are crying out for water and Moses is just not interested in being empathetic about it. But to return to this water idea of water as nourishment as well, Moses was in a position to nourish the people spiritually, emotionally, physically, and he did it with resentment. And when rain falls and it doesn't flood and it allows crops to grow and it allows the world to drink, it's not destructive. And when rain falls and it's torrential and we don't have the ecosystem set up for it, the amount of rain that we get or whatever it is incredibly destructive. So Moses, as fire, could have been gentled by the water. He could have been taking example from the water. And I think it's his downfall because he didn't.
I really appreciate your statement of taking things from the water, you know, especially because when you look at Moshe, like the idea is he was drawn from the water, which is what his name is meant to be. But your statement is that water can be really powerful and truly like extraordinary. And I think about this in terms of the work that you do with Mayim Chaim. And you talked about this mikvah, a ritual bath. But, like, why would people go take a bath? I don't understand. Like, what is this mikvah of which you speak?
That's such a great question. So what is a mikvah? I am going to put on my mikvah hat for the moment, if you will, and share just a little bit about what a mikvah is and why I think it matters. So a mikvah is a Jewish ritual bath that is done either in flowing waters like a stream, an ocean, a river, or it's done in non-flowing waters inside in a contained space. So traditionally, one does this with no clothes on at all, so there's no separation between oneself and the water, and one immerses themselves fully under the water, traditionally 3 times. So we like to call that a dunk. And so one dunks under the water 3 times fully. And 3 times implies intention, that this wasn't an accidental choice, that you are doing this and you are making a choice in your action. Because you can do something once and it's like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. Twice, oh, I didn't mean to do that. But 3 times means I did this with full knowledge and intention. So mikvah has been practiced for thousands of years in the Jewish world. Right now when we're recording, Rosh Hashanah is coming up, and the Talmud actually has mention of people immersing before Rosh Hashanah in a mikvah to prepare for the high holidays. So to answer your question of, okay, but why? Like, why would I do this thing? Why would I take off all my clothes and go in the water? Well, to prepare ourselves. And to look at this week's Torah portion for a moment, the Israelites are about to have the biggest transition of their lives. Well, second biggest, I guess, because they left slavery, but that whole generation died out. So for this generation, it's the biggest transition of their lives. And how do we prepare for a transition? Mikvah is one of the ways that we have in Judaism to prepare for big transitions. So some really big transitions, going from not being Jewish to Jewish. So conversion can have mikvah as a part of it, and that literally changes the status of a person. And preparing for the high holidays. It's really challenging for me to put my mind and my body and my soul together into one container to walk into Rosh Hashanah. But mikvah is something that helps me get there because it's a fusion of all of those things together. I have to be intentional. I prepare. I take off my glasses, my clothes, my makeup. I shower. I might say some kavanot, some intentions while I do that, that Mayim Chaim has actually created. I'm happy to include those in the show notes. I might say some kavanot, some intentions that Mayim Chaim, my organization, has created in order to help people prepare themselves for immersion. And then I might even bring a ceremony in with me. Mayim Chaim has created many ceremonies to recognize the fact that people have tons of transitions in their lives. We have people who come after a divorce or before getting married. We have people who come for bi mitzvahs. We have parents who come before their child's bi mitzvah. And we have people who come after completing a period of mourning. There are so many transitions we experience. And the Israelites, standing at the edge of this Jordan River, I read that moment when they're crossing over as a form of mikvah. as a form of they have to cross through water. It doesn't happen in this week's parsha, so spoilers, but they have to cross over water and through water to be able to become something new, just the way that they cross the Sea of Reeds to leave slavery. Interestingly enough, when they cross the Sea of Reeds, they don't really leave behind that slavery mentality because they're not actually going through the water. Like, that's my own interpretation of it. But what happens when we go into a mikveh and we allow ourselves to sink into the process, water pun, we actually can transform. We can go through a change. So that's why I think that people could come to the mikveh and why they might come to the mikveh.
You know, back to this idea that we had earlier of this experience kind of bookending with Genesis, with the creation of the earth. I'm also thinking of the creation of Israel, not as the people Israel, but the person from Jacob to Israel, when in that Torah portion, Jacob crosses a river that he calls Yarden, that he calls the Jordan. He says, Avarti et ha-Yarden ve'ata hayiti lishnei machanot, that I crossed this river and now I've become two camps. And at this point, the people are getting ready to cross this river again and be Israel in a very different way, but still holding that name and still kind of holding that tradition of there's still struggle to be had. Jacob or Israel still had a lot of struggle after he crossed that river and became two camps. But now Israel is kind of crossing again, almost crossing back over and having this new experience that maybe isn't all that new.
Yeah. And so it's so gorgeous that you're bringing up Jacob crossing the river because it models what we see in the final Torah portion where Jacob says to the angel, to the person, to whomever this being is that he's struggling with, I won't let you go unless you bless me. Lo asha lechacha ki im berachtani. And the same way that the Israelites are struggling and Moses is struggling with them, but it has to end with blessing. It can't end where it is.
So I think that for me, this particular portion has always been an interesting one. And it may be the fact that I am biased and I'll own it. I am the daughter of two pretty incredible attorneys. I call them my legal advisors, but when I'm not calling them my legal advisors, I call them mom and dad. And dad, we know you listen, so we love you. But for me, this reads a lot like a closing statement. It reads a ton like a summation, right? Like that Moses is standing in a courtroom and he goes, to you and to you, please listen to what I'm about to say. Like, this is important. This is it. And it's almost his last minute plea of like, come on, let me in, let me go, forgive me. Like, I was part of this nation. And like, it's also really their fault. Like, it's not really my fault. It's really their fault. But like, come on. You always call heaven and earth to witness. Like, now I'm doing it, you know? Like, it's a two-way street. And I think that's super powerful. And when you think about it, you know, you said Moses says these words should be repeated. Well, of course, like if you want something to be catchy, you turn it into a song, right? Like you make sure that people are really able to get it. And so here we have this powerful final concluding statement, argument. Sorry, Dad, that I didn't go to law school. But, you know, something that I think really matters. And you say Moses has this fiery temperament and that also water can wear away, you know, some of these rough edges. I say, like, we're seeing some of it here. You know, the fact that Moses, as Gabe said in the beginning, has had a really big character arc. At first he says, wait, me? What makes you think they're going to listen to me? Wait, I don't like to speak. Like, don't make me speak. And here it's the complete opposite. Ha'azinu hashamayim va'adabera. V'tishma ha'aretz imrei fi. Moses is saying, let me speak. I want to say something. I got something to say. And he goes, imrei fi, these words of my mouth. Well, that's pretty powerful, right? You almost imagine Moses taking the stand with his microphone and going, listen to me. Not that I would ever know anything about that, because I definitely don't yell into a microphone every week. But Amalia, like, what are we supposed to do with kind of this final huge courtroom scene that Moses brings to the entire universe?
I struggle with this because everything you say about this is Moses' big last plea, and then it's immediately followed by God being very clear, no, you're not going into the land. You're going to die outside of it, just like your brother Aaron did. And that's that. And you can look at it, but you can't touch. You can't go in. It made me think about, does the punishment fit the crime? Just to go back to, I'm not a lawyer. I have no lawyers in my family, but I'm going to borrow that phrase here because it goes into some bigger questions I have around what can we expect of our leaders and what should we expect of them? And we live in a world where call-out culture and cancel culture are very much alive, and there's lots of arguments about why that's a good thing, and there's lots of arguments on why that's a bad thing. But I think that the heart of the question is, what are real expectations that we should have? And is Moses canceled by God? Like, is this an example of a leader being canceled? And if that's the case, how does tshuva, how does repentance factor into that? Is it possible? And look, I'm just going to pose all those questions rabbinically and not answer them because I don't have answers. But for me, as someone who's a baby rabbi, I only recently was ordained in 2021. I'm still new in my rabbinate, soon by both of you for your various clergy positions. I think a lot about what are the boundaries of power and how do we keep people safe? How do we keep clergy safe? And how do we keep the people they serve safe? And if Moshe, who sort of we say is the greatest prophet of all time, is not allowed to enter into the land that he led the people into, that he was handpicked by God to lead the people to, what punishments have we not offered that actually fit the crimes of other rabbinic figures? When is it that we say, no, there is no forgiveness here? You can still be in relationship, but I can't forgive. Or maybe you can't be in relationship and you can't forgive. Moses is still in relationship with God. Moses is still in relationship with the people, but he doesn't get to be in relationship with the land. And the thing that I want the entire universe to hear is, how do we create and support safe and good and healthy Jewish leaders? So we don't have to ask that question of, does the punishment fit the crime? Or can I do tshuva? Can I do repentance? Can I return? Can I make things right? And I think that the Torah in this sort of last moments of the Torah before we begin again is letting us sit with those questions and ask them and not get away easily with the response, and really in its own way warning us, if Moses was the greatest of all, be careful, make good choices in your leadership, because the stakes are high, as they should be, because when we deal with people, each individual soul, that has really, really, really big implications. So I want to see strong, powerful, productive, healthy leadership in the Jewish world.
This week on Midrashic Mixology, we are thinking about the poetic nature of this Torah portion, Parashat Ha'azinu. So we are proud to present the Poetry Slam. For God's burning rage, start with a few slices of jalapeno. I would use 3, but you do you, based on your preferences. You can also remove the seeds to mitigate some of the spiciness, if that's your thing. Throw those into a highball glass with 2 ounces of silver tequila and muddle them up, the first slam in our slammin' cocktail. If tequila's not your thing, use a lemon-lime soda like Sprite. Next, 5 mint leaves. Take them in your non-dominant hand, and with your strong hand, give them a big slam. Actually, though, one good slap helps release the oils of the mint without totally bruising the leaves. Those go into our glass, along with some ice to cool God's temper. Add in 3/4 of an ounce of lime juice, top with club soda, and stir. Garnish with a slice of lime and a slice of jalapeno, 1 for Moses and 1 for his successor, Joshua. You can decide which is which. We hope you enjoy this spicy, sour, cool cocktail encompassing the very wide range of emotions found in Parashat Ha'azinu. And as always, l'chaim.
If you're really gonna make this the cocktail of Parshat Ha'azinu, You have to make the cocktail and then just look at it, but you're not allowed to drink it.
I love that. I love that so much. That's the final step of the recipe. Just look at it. It's not drink it, just look at it.
Yeah, you have to put in extraordinary amounts of work, but then just stare at it and then cry quietly.
While giving it to someone else.
Yes. Yeah. And begging to be allowed to have it yourself.
But you don't.
Yeah.
Right.
This was an interesting thing. I was going to make a joke about, like, you know, this drink slaps. But I got to tell you, it was a striking cocktail, Gabe. Well done.
Thanks, Amanda.
Well, that drink was a little spicy. And, you know, hopefully, again, some people might say that it slaps. I'm like a little bit sour about the fact that we're already at our kind of ending section of thank yous and closing cues, but it's a good question. And I know Amalia answered a little bit of it before, but we'll see if she has some more takes to give us. So Amalia and Gabe and Ha'azinu, it does seem as if Moses is making his final argument using heaven and earth as his two witnesses. If you were to make a closing argument, what would you want to make sure that the entire universe could support? And because Amalia already shared a little bit of hers, Gabe, we're going to start with you.
I would want the entire universe to really, like, just get behind letting people, like, be themselves. I think we very often, like, try to prescribe how other people should act and what they should do and how they should think. And I think we should, this sounds, like, very cliche, we need to be okay with other people being different from us. And we need to, you know, kind of live and let live. But even more so, we need to welcome in a diverse range of ideas and beliefs and practices. I think the, you know, idea of pluralism is that we all benefit from learning from each other and from each other's beliefs and practices and ways of doing things.
So what I hear you saying a little bit is this idea of back from Nitzavim, Uvacharta Bechayim Leman Tichyeh Ata V'Zarecha, that you should choose life, but you should choose the life that you, you know, really want people to live. A life that seems full of love right now. I think that's amazing. Amalia, what else do you want to add to your incredible insights from before? Or if you want to take us in a different direction, that's cool too.
Look, I love being able to take things in a different direction. I still stand by everything I said. But if I get a chance to offer another thing, I love a good PS. I think my closing argument that I want the entire universe to support is that we should always have 3-day weekends. Should be standard.
That's so much better than my answer. Can I change my answer? I like that.
I liked your answer too. I think both answers have space enough here. 70 faces to the Torah.
Cool, cool, cool. As long as I can, you know, get behind the 3-day weekend thing also. Awesome.
We can support each other's answers, and I'm excited to hear Amanda's.
I think for me, if I was going to make a closing argument, and it's hard, right? Like, you know, when I think about making an argument to the entire universe, to heaven and earth, it's difficult because I have to think a little bit about, like, climate change, and that makes the conversation a bit of a bummer. But if I could get the whole universe to, like, get behind on something, it's like, hey, it'd be really great if we could stop destroying our planet. You know, it would be super awesome if the world would continue to exist and we could learn how to, I don't know, actually be in partnership with the world. And then maybe the world wouldn't be so pissed at us all the time for, you know, wrecking it on a regular basis with bad choices, like whatever. I don't want to necessarily get into the negatives, but I will say that for a Ha'azinu episode that does talk about calling out to the heavens and the earth, please keep in mind, like, the reason there's so much water in the Parsha is because we weren't wasting it now. So just be thoughtful about your use of the resources that we have, because the reason that we're able to call on them as witnesses is because they exist. And I think that's pretty cool. I think that's, like, a great thing. And so for me, I think the universe could probably get behind this idea of us being better to our planet within the universe. But I know that might be a difficult conversation and one that, like, it took us a little bit far afield in our conversation today. So, Amalia, if people want to continue the conversation that you started, which is an important one, how can they find or follow you?
For lots of cat content, you can follow me at Your Local Rabbi at Instagram, and that is where I exist. I only post photos of my cats.
Incredible. I'm really incredibly sure that Gabe is going to follow that account like immediately, possibly before we're even done recording. Actually, our listeners keeping track at home, he's doing it right now. Amalia, any last words, thoughts, concerns, or jokes? I feel like you've had a decent amount of things come up today, so I'm like very excited for what you might have to say right now.
I think final words, final closing arguments, thoughts, all of that is that this is a bittersweet moment of we're starting to wind down the cycle just to begin again. The bittersweet moment of the Israelites about to experience transformation and transition. And if I may, I just want to do a little pitch for mikvah. If you find yourself in an experience where you want to be able to connect all the parts of yourself as you move forward through a transition, I cannot suggest enough that you go to a mikvah. You can either, if you're in the Boston area, come to Mayim Chaim. You can check us out on our website, mayimchaim.org, or you can look at our network of open mikvahot all across the world at risingtideopenwaters.org. And I wish you much success with the many transitions that you are going through.
Thank you so much. And I know Amalia is going to give us some of the information that she shared today for show notes, and so we'll make sure to post those. So check us out at www.drinkinganddrashing.com. You'll always be able to see show notes there or at anchor.fm/drinking-drashing. Just in case you're ever curious, we are always excited to see you at either place. Thank you, Rabbi Amalia Mark, for joining us today. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you to my ultimate partner in podcasting, Gabe Snyder. Idan, we miss you so much. We're ready for you to come back. But, you know, keep on keeping on. We're excited to have you as we enter our new year. Kate, thanks so much for making us sound great. We really do hope that your computer gets fixed soon. Hopefully by the time this airs, you'll have a new one. We're excited for it. And congratulations on the new, you know, entry to your family. And to all our listeners, we love you. We wouldn't be here without you. We think you're incredible, and we hope that you continue to listen in. Our conclusion's coming at you soon. Stay tuned. Gabe, you know, I've never been one who's huge on poetry, but it really was kind of an incredible opportunity to delve into the Torah portion through a new kind of lens, you know, to be able to see how the words might play with each other to create a sound and a cadence that carries us with it.
It strikes me as like really important that the Torah has a few songs in it. And the word for poem and the word for song in classical Hebrew, it's the same word, it's just shir. But we have a few of those throughout our sacred text. We have probably the most famous is Shirat Hayam, is Micha Mocha. That song that the Israelites sang after they crossed the Sea of Reeds. We have the Song of the Well, where we hear spring up a well and sing unto it. We have in our prophets, we have the Song of Devorah, arise, arise, Devorah, and sing a song. And here we get a song. And I think there's something about poetry, about songs that, you know, as Amalia said, really calls out to us. It calls for attention in a different way than, I don't know, normal speech or the rest of the text might.
I think Amalia also spoke to this idea that different energies come together, you know, whether it's poetry or this image of fire or this image of water, you know, either way, both of those have major influence on the environment around them. And here we've had this force, right? Like, yeah, talking about fire and water as their own forces, but Moses himself was a force to be reckoned with. And this whole moment is a powerful plea for continuing to be a leadership force when it might be time to pass that on.
It strikes me that fire and water both have both these like cleansing purposes, but also like really destructive purposes. They have the ability to, you know, heat things or to give us life, to sustain us. but also to burn and to flood and drown. And I think Moses kind of exists in the same way. Like, Moses leads the people and is a shepherd and clearly has this way about him that's entirely constructive, that really makes the people what they are. And yet at the same time, from the time we meet him, he strikes down the Egyptian and he strikes the rock and he smashes the tablets, and he has all of these moments where he has these flares of anger, which I think Amalia also spoke to, that he's a feisty guy. You know, he's fiery, he's spicy, he's got a lot of stuff going on.
So I don't disagree with you about the fire. And I think sometimes when we get to older places, when we get to the end of the line, there are times where we feel more confident, where we're more likely to step up and say our piece. And if you think about it, the same thing happens in Vayechi, right? I know that you and Amalia brought up Jacob earlier in crossing the river, but also there's a pretty powerful, like, kind of deathbed scene that Jacob has in Vayechi where he says his piece and it's not pretty. And I think here, keep in mind, like, this is Moses's, you know, address to B'nai Israel. So it's not just his children, but it's all of the children of Israel who he feels like he's been taking care of from day one. And I guess I also could understand being tired and not wanting to deal with it and not really feeling appreciated. I mean, hey, parenting is hard. Am I right? I mean, I don't know, but my parents sure do. That's the second parent shout out that I've given today. Hi, Mom and Dad. Love you. But really think about it, Gabe. You know, a lot of the time, Moses isn't necessarily always appreciated for the work that he's put in. And yeah, sometimes he lashes out. And what's unfortunate is that lashing out is the major thing that a lot of people remember about Moses. Yeah, he did the whole, like, getting the people across the sea thing. And yeah, I guess he got them to the finish line, but not over the finish line. But his major thing, the thing that he gets rewarded for at the end of his life, is that he struck a rock and can't go out. I would be fighting that too. So I understand him pleading his case in Hazinu. But listen, Moses isn't the only one that makes a good argument, and he's not the only one that does a good pleading for the case. So hear us out. We love doing this podcast, but it doesn't come cheap. And so our hope is that if you want to support us, if you want to, you know, give us a pat on the back, preferably than a slap or a strike, we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to give us a rating on iTunes or on Spotify or however you're listening to us. Give us 5 stars. We love them. Give us a fun comment. We actually read all of them, I promise. We'd love to hear from you at drinkinganddroshing@gmail.com. And also, if you're interested in helping support us, head over to www.drinkinganddroshing.com and hit that support us button. As we're going into the new year, keep in mind, we also need your help to stay afloat. We're really thankful for all of you listening in each week. And as always, we raise our glasses to you. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Amalia Mark, and you've been listening to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist. And I am not going to miss my shot of gin. Here we go.